what I'm noticing is a widespread recognition that things are moving very quickly here, that this is both a time for great hope and also a very potentially chaotic time as well. Most people here you talk to will say they know that a year from now things are going to look very different, and they're not sure whether they're going to be significantly better or even worse. But it's a very dramatic time, an exciting time, and there is a sense of anxiety, but also a sense of optimism, although I don't necessarily think that is true in Israel. It is true most everywhere else that we've been.
What is the mood in Israel, and do you think the reason there's the contrast is because of the ongoing conflict in Israel, between Israel and Palestinians?
Well, I think that certainly the Israelis live in a constant state of anxiety and, to a certain extent, fear. So dramatic change exacerbates that. I think Prime Minister Netanyahu has not helped the situation at all, because his tendency is to keep the public on edge, and I'm not saying that there's not justification for some of that, but that's been his style and his strategy for a long time. So I think the Israelis are more anxious and a little bit apprehensive about what might happen and how it might affect their country than, for instance, the Egyptians are, who are almost uniformly excited and optimistic.
Were you disappointed that the Prime Minister of Israel, Prime Minister Netanyahu, didn't meet with your delegation?
Well, I was disappointed because I think one of the things that resulted from his trip to the United States and his appearance before Congress is that he left with the perception that there is overwhelming support for his policies in Congress and the country. And I think it would have been useful for him to hear that the response that he received in Congress, in my opinion, illustrated and demonstrated a broad support for Israel, but not necessarily for his policies. And I thought that would have been useful for him to hear. But we've also had the opportunity to make that very clear to a number of other people in the government and in the Knesset, which is the parliament in Israel. So I hope they get that message.
Even though you didn't get to meet or sit down with Prime Minister Netanyahu, you've had a chance to meet with other leaders in the region, particularly Egypt's military leader and foreign minister, I believe, and also the Palestinian prime minister. Talk about, I guess, what the contrast, you know, Egypt certainly was in the news earlier this year with the overthrow of President Mubarak. What was the impression you got from the Egyptian leaders, and what did you talk to them about?
The impression, well, we talked to them about a variety of things. One, where they thought Egypt was heading, what they thought the likely result of the election process would be, who might be in line to be the next leader of the country, how they might help achieve peace in this part of the world, and what their priorities were going to be. And there was, a universal attitude of optimism. They thought things were going to be much better politically and socially, ultimately, for the Egyptian people. They are concerned about their economic prospects because they do have economic challenges, some of them brought about by the revolution, because tourism is one of their major sources of income. But again, they all are thrilled by the advent of true democracy in Egypt, and they know that this means a better future for them. They also have a very strong sense that what happens in Egypt will determine what happens in many other autocratic Arab nations in the region, so they want to make sure they get it right, because they do understand that they have a leadership role to play here. And they're very cognizant of that fact, and also excited by the prospect of being the second democracy in the Middle East. first in the Arab world.
When it comes to the United States' role in that, the U.S. certainly has during the Cold War, played chess all over the world with the Soviet Union, and in that region in particular, and supported some leaders who it would be polite to call them dictators. Does the United States, what approach does it need to take, particularly as we see these democratic movements in Middle Eastern countries? There's this hesitation, obviously, to support some of these governments and groups outright because you don't know who they would vote for and who they would put in power. I think people would point to the situation with leaders from Hamas are taking over and winning elections in Palestine, parts of Palestine. When it comes to the United States' role, should we be more hesitant or should we, you know, jump in 2 feet first?
I think every situation has to stand on its own. I think we remain as a country committed to supporting countries that promote democracy and freedom, and I think that's what our posture should be. The extent to which we can play an effective role in any given situation in any given country will change. It will be different, as we've seen. We've seen in Libya, and we've seen in Yemen and other places. So, one thing is very clear, that in terms of the Israeli-Palestinian situation, the United States has to play a leadership role, and we cannot sit by and expect the two sides, or the two sides with the help of a third party like France, to get the negotiations going in a meaningful direction. The United States is going to have to be extremely active in getting the Israelis and the Palestinians to the table to achieve peace.
In your conversation with Palestinian Prime Minister Salam Fayyad, was that commitment, was that asked of the Palestinian leader that the United States need to take a more active role in the negotiations?
Definitely in making sure that the two sides get to the table. This was something the Egyptians made very clear, and Prime Minister Fayyad made very clear, and I think the Israelis believe that as well. Right now, with Netanyahu throwing up so many impediments to negotiations and adding new conditions all the time, somebody's going to have to get him to the table, and he's playing right now, in my perception, as a very strong supporter of Israel. He is playing a very dangerous game of chicken, and there is a this fall, absent serious progress in negotiations, there is going to be a vote in the United Nations to declare Palestine an independent nation, and that could be extremely harmful to the prospects for peace. So what we've got to make sure is that I think that we put pressure on the Israeli government to get to the table and to do it without preconditions, as we should do with the Palestinians. The Palestinians basically have said, we will go with no precondition. They've essentially said that. So and that's certainly personally my feeling as well. If you go with preconditions, you're not negotiating.
President Obama, in his recent speech, there were his critics pointed out that he essentially threw Israel under the bus. Do you think that the president threw Israel under the bus in his speech?
No, as a matter of fact, the Israelis, if you speak to the average Israeli or members of the Knesset, they will tell you they thought that President Obama's speech was very strong, that it represented a U.S. policy that they are familiar with and accept, and they got, what they will tell you is they thought it was more pro-Israeli than they would have expected. So I think that perception in the United States is extremely misguided, and certainly with regard to the Israeli people.
The roadblock, it seems that you're saying, is there is Prime Minister Netanyahu himself. If President Obama can't get him to the table, if the United States can't get him to the table, then who can?
Well, only Israeli people. Right now, the Israeli people are pretty much standing behind Prime Minister Netanyahu, although most Israeli people strongly support a two-state solution. I made the analogy the other day. It's kind of like our debate over dealing with entitlement programs in the United States. There's broad consensus that we have to deal with entitlement programs. The details are a lot more complicated and contentious, that's the way it is here. 75% of the Israeli people accept the need for a two-state solution, but how you get there and how much you give up become points of contention. That's why negotiations are critical. I think what we've heard from the Palestinians, and I think what they've said publicly, is they seem a lot more flexible in their demands and positions, and the Israelis seem a little bit more intractable. So that's what negotiations are for. Everybody seems to have, and Prime Minister Netanyahu said this himself, he supports a two-state solution. He wants to get there. If you don't go into the table, you can't figure out how to get there. We have focused, the two sides have focused far more historically on process than on achieving peace. And, you know, with roadmaps, the roadmap became more important than the objective. And both sides here know where they want to go. They can't figure out how to get there unless they talk. My very frustrated impression after talking to an awful lot of people here is there are brilliant people on all sides of this question, and if brilliant people, and they all want to get to the same place, if brilliant people can't get to the same place, then something's wrong.
What is going to be when you return to the States, and when the delegation gets back, what is going to be their recommendation? Will you all draft a letter of some sort to the White House?
Well, we will be talking about that. One of the things that we will make sure that we communicate to the administration, whether it's through Secretary Clinton or directly to the White House, we will communicate the essential message that it is critical that the United States move quickly and decisively to get the two sides to the table. And right now, that means, I think, putting pressure on Prime Minister Netanyahu to get to the negotiating table.
What is your message to the people who are really active and passionate about the ongoing conflict in Israel, and the decades-long conflict between Palestinians and Israelis? What message do you have for them, since you've actually gone there, as many have here, many locals, many of your constituents who have gone to Gaza, the West Bank, and Israel on different humanitarian trips and activist trips? But what's your message to them as you come back?
Well, my message to them is I think there is, this is probably the greatest opportunity that there has ever been to reach peace, both between Israel and the Palestinians and in this part of the world. But the window may close very quickly, and there is no way to tell what will happen a year from now. So we need to make sure that we take care of this, take advantage of this very rare opportunity. The United States has to play a leadership role, not in taking sides, but in making sure that the two sides get to the table. Both the Israeli people and the Palestinians seem willing to go along with their leadership, and they're in search of a common objective. I think we can play an incredibly important historic role at this time, and I hope our government does that.